We're talking typeface here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The font you choose says more about you than you may think. We're looking at the effects of typography on our emotions, and just a ballpark figure here, there are perhaps 300,000 fonts in our world. A lot to pick from. We surveyed some of our colleagues on the ones they prefer.
Gotham. It just goes well with everything.
Universe. It's a practical face that you can use for many things.
Verdana? It's just always been like my go-to.
Garamond is the most professional font.
You can't trust someone who uses Comic Sans.
Do you have strong feelings about fonts? Which ones do you love and which ones do you loathe and why? Do you have a story about using the wrong font? Join in at 800-642-1234. Sarah Hindman is a graphic designer and author of several books about typeface, including Why Fonts Matter. Sarah, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
We just heard that montage of voices there on fonts. And the question we had posed to the people was, you know, whom would you hire based on what font they used? And there, people had pretty strong opinions. Why is it that we're able to pass judgment when the only information we have about someone is their font?
I think this is so interesting. As human beings, whenever we encounter a new situation, we make really instant snap judgments. And when you're looking at typefaces, at fonts, or what you're doing is you're looking at them in the same way that you would think about what somebody wearing, what's their body language telling you, what does their facial expression communicate to you. So we make all of these really instantaneous judgments. But then we also have these associations we make with different typefaces. For example, Gotham has gathered a lot of associations over the last few years. So we have both of these things that actually give us a huge amount of information.
What are some associations we've made with Gotham?
So Gotham really came to fame, I would say, in around 2008. When Obama was running for president and his campaign was all about change. And the typographic political landscape at the time had a lot of much more traditional typefaces, the serif typefaces with the feet on them that talk about knowledge, history, knowledge and history. Whereas Gotham is a very clean sans serif typeface. It doesn't have those little feet. Although it's actually been designed very much inspired by mid-20th century typefaces. So it still has that notion of history, but it's modern history. But you put that against the other typefaces at the time, and the campaign didn't just say change. The actual shape of the words it used embodied this whole idea of change.
Wow, that's a lot riding on the back of a font there. We're packing in a lot of meaning. I mean, there is a lot of meaning that you see in fonts. It's common knowledge that if you want to be taken seriously, you shouldn't use Comic Sans. So how do these associations come to be?
Firstly, every time you see a typeface, you make lots of assumptions from the context that you see it in. So Comic Sans, there's kind of a hint in its name. It's got the word comic in it. Mm-hmm. It's inspired by comic books. So most of the time you would see it in comic or childlike scenarios. So if you suddenly see it in a different scenario, you might think that it feels a little bit out of place. It's like an actor being miscast in a film. It won't feel true. It won't ring true. And there are really lovely stories. One of my favorites is that when CERN announced the discovery of the Higgs boson particle, the God particle. So this is one of the biggest scientific discoveries of our lifetimes. They announced it in Comic Sans.
Oh,
and on
my goodness.
Twitter, within minutes, it was Comic Sans that was actually trending on Twitter higher than the discovery of the scientific of the Higgs boson particle.
So one of most sophisticated science lab in the world, CERN in Switzerland, is using Comic Sans, which is such a contrast to really the integrity of what's going on there.
So that's what was everybody was saying on Twitter. But of course, this is just Twitter, and it doesn't really devalue the discovery for one moment. And when the director was asked, she said, well, we just wanted it to look like handwriting. And the whole idea, a lot of the time people will use Comic Sans because they don't want to feel pressured into actually thinking about designing typefaces. They just want to write something. So in those kind of scenarios, you can understand why it gets used.
Talking with Sarah Hindman, she's a graphic designer, and we're talking about the impact of typography on our lives. You can join in this conversation, 800-642-1234. And graphic designers out there, what are your thoughts on typography? Why does it matter? How does it affect the work you do? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Sarah, how does all of this apply to marketing and the way that companies choose to portray their products and what, in the end, what we choose to buy? Do fonts matter that much?
They, in my opinion, they do, because that's what I do for a living. And also, if you just look around any shop, you will see that there is such a huge range of different typographic voices that clearly it must matter, otherwise people wouldn't put money into doing this. One of the first things that you do, especially if you go into a supermarket, is you will filter out the things that you don't want to buy, or you will just look for the things that you do want to buy. And one of the ways you will do that is looking for the appropriate typefaces. If you want cheap bargain, you know that these will be the big, bold, uppercase, blocky typefaces, probably in really bright colors. If you want the more luxurious, the more expensive version of something, you will probably look for more finesse typefaces where there's a bit more space around them. They might be smaller, they might be more spaced out. And these are instant visual codes that cue you into the first level of how you're navigating your way around your life.
Are there trends in fonts? Because we have the sense that sans serif is the font to use right now, and Google changed its logo to sans serif font in 2015. Are there trends setting companies, or are there trend lines in fonts?
Really interesting question. And the answers that people were giving on when you queued this up, I noticed most of those were sans serif typefaces. Mm. Yes, there are absolutely trends. I think these, a lot of the times, these come more from cultural attitudes. And so one of the things I do is I look at the way typefaces change or have changed over the centuries. And once you match these up to what was happening in the wider social historical world, you start to get a real sense of how they map change. So what we've had in the last 10 years or so is, thanks to iPhones, we've had this real love affair with technology and how much it can do, and social media. And also because screens in the early days of all of this weren't very high quality, sans serif typefaces were much easier to read. We're now coming to an end of that trend where people are now wanting things that feel more in tune with nature, that are a bit more local. It feels like there's a little bit of a move away from big business, big corporate, big tech companies, and wanting something that's a little bit more personal. So we're seeing, almost in the same way that we saw the 1950s was when modernism and all these sans serif typefaces were really having their heyday.
Mm-hmm.
And then two decades later in the 70s, everything looked really hand-painted. It was all very natural. And it feels like we're going through quite a similar trend, quite a similar path now. So you have yogurts and different brands having these really nice, voluptuous serif typefaces that feel like they've come from the 1970s.
Talking with Sarah Hindman. She's a graphic designer, author of several books about typeface. Your thoughts as well, 800-642-1234. What is your story about a favorite font? Let's talk about it in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the impact that typography has on our lives. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Apparently, curvy fonts are on trend right now as brands are moving away from tidy sans serif. They're embracing more of a funky 70s vibe. That's it. Groovy, curvy, smooth typefaces have more expressive human feel, and corporate branding people are game for that. Do you have strong feelings about fonts? Which ones do you love? Which ones do you loathe? And why? Designers out there, how do fonts impact your work? We're at 800-642-1234. You can join in. Sarah Heinemann stays with us. She is a graphic designer and the author of several books about typeface. Let's go to the phones now with Carol joining us from Chippewa Falls. Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yes, I enjoy using Tahoma because it's just, for me, visually easier to read.
So when you see Tahoma font, or how do you use that font?
I just use it every day.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's thicker.
Okay. Yeah, so it has nice differences between thick and thin lines. So what do we know, Sarah, about Tahoma?
It's one of the typefaces that has very much been designed to work well on screen. A lot of the more traditional, the older typefaces were designed for print. So that would make a lot of sense why you would use it almost like your on-screen version of handwriting. And once you get used to it, it's something that you will find easy to read, and it sounds like it's quite a practical choice to make.
How can fonts affect the way we interpret what we're reading, and in particular in books?
Oh, very interesting. There's been quite a lot of research done that shows that we make really, really instant assumptions. So we will assume that something might be more intelligent. And when we read that book, we read it through that filter. And we will actually, it has been proven that we will find it more intelligent. There have been studies where they've got people to read newspapers in different typefaces. And some typefaces will make, say, the New York Times feel more satirical than other typefaces. So it's just this filter through which we read something.
So do publishers tend to use the same fonts, or are there particular go-to fonts that publishers use for books, or are there variations?
There seem to be variations depending on the publishers. If you're a traditional publisher who has a particular look that you will always want to stick to, so you have a house style,
mm-hmm.
then they will use pretty similar typefaces. Others will pair the typefaces because it will be the voice of the book.
Mm.
And so each book will actually have its own signature language or its own voice.
You did this project a few years back where you asked people to look at a set of fonts and choose which one they'd want to date. What were you hoping to find out there?
I play lots and lots of games that are, everything I do is all about showing people that we don't have to take typography seriously all of the time, and that actually all of us already understand what fonts mean. And rather than me just asking a question like, what do you think of Times New Roman? If I say Times New Roman, Arial, Comic Sans, Snog, Marry, Avoid, and I start asking people, which one would you go on a date with? You suddenly find that even people who go, I know nothing, they suddenly have an answer and can also give you a whole backstory about the personality of that typeface if you give a fun and mischievous scenario.
And then suddenly you find out the backstory of the person themselves and their personality.
It does. The things that the associations we make, absolutely, they reveal a lot about the context in which we've learned all of these things. So I also have another game where I show you a particular spiky black letter on a record, and I ask you what kind of music. And for me, I would say heavy metal, but then I show it to other people and they would say, no, it's hip hop, or somebody else would say, no, it's Taylor Swift, or somebody else would say, no, it's Wagner. So a lot of the assumptions we make, yes, you're right, they absolutely reflect a huge amount about us.
And it's so interesting how our eye can pick up subtle changes to fonts. When a company decides to change their logo, they change their font, and we notice we can pick up these subtle variations. Why is that?
Presumably because you know that logo well enough that you will actually see. And also, we're creatures of habit. Once something's familiar, we don't really like change that much. So it takes us a little bit of time to get used to it. When it's a company like Google, their reputation precedes them. Frankly, they could put their logo in Comic Sans and it would be lots and lots of talking, but nobody would stop using Google because of that. Whereas a much more unknown company, your typeface really is the voice. It really is the first impression. So it becomes much more important that you make the right choices at that level.
Sarah, here's a great question from Phil from Soldiers Grove, and he called in to ask how fonts get their names. Some of them seem really weird or silly, he says. Like Tahoma, where do these names come from?
I don't actually know where the name Tahoma came from, but the naming of fonts almost mirrors history. So original, really early ones were just named after the people who had designed them. And then you have this amazing time in the 1800s when display typefaces were going completely mad, and they were named after to fashions. So Egyptian artifacts were really popular at one point. So a style of typeface was called Egyptian, not because it had anything to do with Egypt, but because it was a trendy name and it was a good marketing tool. More recently, we have people like Jonathan Barmbrook who name his typefaces with really unusual names that are meant to make you stop and notice them. So they're almost little campaigns in the actual font naming. Ones like Gotham's a good example, because this was designed by Tobias Frere Jones, and he loves mid-20th century typefaces from New York. So Gotham is obviously New York in the Batman movies.
Sure, yeah. So I wanted to know how many fonts there are in the world, and of course you Google that, and there are hundreds of thousands of fonts. Is that true?
Yes, and as we're speaking, there'll be another one being designed. Oh, and there's another one. It's easier than ever these days, thanks to technology, to design typefaces. Some of them will take like years to develop because they need to have all of the different families. But others, if it's just a quick display typeface, you can create one yourself. So they are constantly new ones appearing.
What makes a font stand the test of time?
Oh, interesting. I think some, like Helvetica, because they are just practical workhorses almost. I'm sure I'm going to get complaints for saying that. but they're versatile enough that they can fit into most situations. Others will come and go. So we will have an era where particular style of serifs are being used. They will fall out of fashion, then they might come back into fashion again. There's also the technology. So at the moment, because we're looking at much smaller screens, typefaces are designed to actually fit within the technology, which is also why new ones are constantly being designed, because every time technology changes, we need more. We need typefaces that work with that technology. We're human beings. We just like to express ourselves.
Do you find as a designer you get in a rut perhaps and keep going back to the same typefaces, or do you force yourself to explore a bit, to branch out?
That's another good question. I would say in my early career I had a palette of certain typefaces I would use. As time has gone on, I now very much work with the client. I work on the project, and I look at what is going to be the right tone of voice for that project. And even if that means using a typeface that I might not personally like so much, if it's right and if it's appropriate, then that's what we would go with.
I used to work with a designer who always was talking about the thicks and the thins of a particular font. You have to get the right thicks and thins. Is the heft of a font, does that have a lot of impact on what you're trying to communicate?
That absolutely does. So one thing would be legibility, and another one is that things like prestige, there are certain concepts that will be conveyed. So the typefaces that would be at the top end, so I do lots of surveys and lots of experiments. The typefaces that are at the top end of the prestige scale are ones that have fine hairline details, or that would have extreme thick and thin contrast. So it looks like a lot of craft has gone into these. Mm-hmm. The ones at the lower, the cheaper end of the scale will be the really bold ones, maybe with no contrast, maybe with curved corners, so they look a little bit more like they've been drawn with a chunky felt tip pen.
So as we start to close here, what's up with the 70s vibe that's going on and like all of these curvy and kind of curvy, smooth typefaces? Is there a revival going on to the 70s?
It looks like there is. Flares are coming back in, which I'm not wearing again. but I think if you look also at just what's happening generally, we are beginning to, we're loving nature. We're loving air. We're moving away from wanting everything to be too high tech. Mm. And that's very much what was happening in the 70s. And a lot of the 70s typefaces are actually originally Art Nouveau typefaces, which is, again, another time when we were embracing nature and paint.
Yeah.
So I think it's just things are cyclical and this is coming back again.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us.
Pleasure.
Sarah Hindman is a graphic designer, author of several books about typeface, including Why Fonts Matter. And we've been talking about the impact of typography on human emotions. Coming up, Uber and Lyft drivers in several major cities plan to strike tomorrow morning. We're asking about working conditions here in the Midwest. We'll talk about it after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.